there's tons of people that are successful with capital raising. So find out what they're doing and do it, right? Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try and forge the path all on your own. Find somebody who's doing it well and follow them and, you know, use them as your mentor and your guide as you start out on your own journey.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Rochelle McCoy has been investing in real estate since 2017. Her portfolio currently consists of single-family homes and small multifamily properties, which she has forced appreciation by 2 times and doubled the NOI in 3 short years. In her spare time, she's a mother of 3 very energetic boys, wife, and dedicated advocate for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital and the St. Jude Runs organization, helping fundraise over $113,000 since 2011. Rochelle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. I'm super excited to be here.
The pleasure's all mine. That's a lot of miles. That's a lot of miles to run or to raise $113,000 for it. So well done.
It is.
That's a lot of fun. You know, the same questions I ask everybody, which, hey, you know what? I can hear the 3 energetic boys in the background. Isn't that fun that what we get to do here in real estate so often in, you know, incorporates family right alongside what we're doing? So good for you. I love that. The same questions that everybody who comes on the show is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sure. Absolutely. So I've got a 20 plus year business and marketing career for a Fortune 50 company, career that's served me very well. I've learned a ton and really grown there. But about 5 years ago or so, I was put in a position where they were doing some corporate downsizing, and it just so happened that the job that I was in got eliminated. There was about 4 other people in the same job as me, so all of us got cut. The fortunate thing was that through a number of different reorganizations, we basically got moved and shuffled into a new job. So none of us were unemployed for any amount of time, but just, you know, the scariness of that happening to you was really my big wake-up call. I'd seen it, you know, I've been with this company for 20 years, and I had seen that happen to a lot of other people.
Right.
And it had been close to me, but never me. And so when it finally, the ball finally rolled down and it came my way, that was really my wake-up call to say, I have to start doing something a little differently. I need a backup plan. I need to be able to support my family should the next time I'm not so fortunate to get, you know, put into a new position immediately. And I truly am unemployed. So That was my big why for real estate and why I got started. Now that said, my husband and I, we've been married for 22 years, just had our anniversary last weekend. We've been talking about investing in real estate since we've been married. Wow. And for one reason or another, we never did it. We never took any action. It was talk. It was something that was, oh, someday we'll do that. And we never did. And so that day when I came home from work, I was like, something's got to change, right? Like that was so scary and so stressful. And, you know, there's no guarantee I'll never be put in that position again. But if I am, I want a backup plan. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking around at different options of how can I grow my wealth? How can I do something on the side, right? Have some type of side hustle that's going to, you know, provide another stream of income for my family. And that's when I found real estate. Like many people, I heard an advertisement for a house flipper and I was like, ooh, I could do that. As so many people do. And so I started marching down the path of, you know, doing what a lot of us do, where it's like, I read the Rich Dad Poor Dad book. I started, I signed up for Audible and started listening to every ebook I could get my hands on that was around, you know, real estate, investing, building your wealth, all that type of stuff. And just really spent, I would say, the next 9 months or so just learning and absorbing everything that I possibly could. So from there, we end up purchasing a property. We went with a fourplex on our first go round. So we didn't technically go the single family route on our first purchase, but we purchased a fourplex. It was fully occupied, but still had a lot of what we would now in the multifamily space called value add, right? That wasn't a term that was even in my vocabulary 4 years ago, but it had a lot of opportunities to put in better tenants, to raise the rents, to fix up the building and the surrounding grounds. And so over the course of the past couple of years, we've done that and we've really, really turned the property around. And then from there, we've purchased a couple others. We actually had the opportunity to purchase the 2 other fourplexes on the same cul-de-sac. So we literally have 3 fourplexes right in a row, which obviously is incredibly convenient, right? If you need to run over there for any reason, it's helpful having them all in one place. So that's kind of how we got started in the background. In between there, we've purchased a few other properties as well. So we have a single family home and a condo in addition to those three fourplexes.
That's awesome. I mean, the fact that you got three, four, I mean, it's a, obviously a fourplex is a multifamily property, but you got three of them side by side.
Mm-hmm.
You get one guy out or one repair person out and they could, you know, take care of multiple problems at once if there are.
Yeah. I mean, literally last week I called a plumber and he stopped by each of the three fourplexes for different issues. They just happened to all kind of line up and some of them weren't urgent issues. So I kind of told the tenant, hey, you know, the next time we call a plumber, we'll have him fix this too. And so, yeah, we just had him stop by all three. He fixed them all up and just, it's quite efficient doing that. Another thing that really works in our favor is the two fourplexes that we bought after the first one. It was a package deal. And there was a gentleman that's been living there for 20 years that has always mowed the grass and done the maintenance. So we literally have a live-in maintenance guy as well. That's, you know, super awesome. If you just have a little quick thing that needs to be fixed here and there, he can walk next door and take care of it. And it saves us from all the running of having to do that ourselves.
Right, man, that's fantastic. Good for you. And so let's go back to the why. I think that's an important part of your story. You were obviously in corporate. Are you still in corporate America? Can I ask that?
I am. Yes, yeah, still okay. At the same job, different job, same company.
Right. Yeah, understood. Yeah, but you wanted to have a backstop. You want to have a plan that said, okay, if this happens, then at least I know that, you know, some other income coming in the door that I don't have to worry about. At what point in time could you replace your income with real estate investing?
I think it really comes down to always the definition of financial freedom for most people is covering their living expenses.
Right.
But I want to do more than just cover my living expenses. So I think for us, it would take more than that, right? A percentage more to be able to get us to a point where we were comfortable in leaving that W-2 behind and going full-time with real estate investing.
Right. But either way, you've still scaled what you've, you know, your guys' holdings, and it sounds like you are continuing to desire to scale that. So I guess let's talk about that for a minute. Have there been some surprises or pitfalls along the way as you guys have grown? And I know your three were all together, which makes it somewhat easier. But, you know, what have been some things maybe that you didn't expect as you guys have grown your portfolio?
Oh, yeah, there's always that. So lots of different things with tenants that have come up that you never plan for. I've talked to the police more often since I've owned rental than I ever did before in my life, which never really had a reason to talk to the police before, I guess. But yeah, I talk to the cops on a somewhat regular basis and not so much now that we've re-tenanted the property. That has definitely decreased, but that was one surprise where I felt like for a period of time I was on speed dial. Right. The cops. It's just never a good feeling. Every property has its own issues, its own nuances. And so we had one, our single family home, we were told that they never had water in the basement. And the first time we had a major rainstorm, the tenant's calling me and she's like, there's 2 inches of water in the basement. And so, yeah, and then you're, you know, in panic and the recourse mode, trying to figure out what you're going to do to get that resolved as quickly as possible. So we've had a number of those different types of things where just information wasn't disclosed, or in some cases, when we purchased the properties, the owner was just gone, right? Whether they had moved out of state or, you know, whatever the case may be, where you just don't get the opportunity to get information out of them. One of the people we purchased a property from, you know, I asked, tell me any tenant name, phone number, I need their lease amounts, their security deposit. She hand wrote it on a piece of paper, took a photo with her phone and sent it to me. That's all I had to start with. I mean, I didn't have lease agreements. I had nothing with signatures on it. It was a little scary, just kind of knocking on the doors and calling them up for the first time and saying, hey, I'm your new landlord, like it or not. And she didn't tell them ahead of time. So it was a complete surprise to most of the tenants when we showed up.
Did you buy those off market or did you have a broker working with you on those?
We bought them off market. So one of the tenants in the first fourplex that we bought, because she wants a nice quiet neighborhood with good neighbors and a clean building, because she can see one of the fourplexes straight out her front window. It was very run down and tired looking. And she knew that we would take good care of it. So she was talking to one of the tenants at the neighboring property. And she said, hey, I think my landlord would maybe want to buy this if you know that your owner's ever selling it. And so, yeah, when the opportunity came up, I was the first call they made. It never went on the market. We negotiated and closed it out pretty quick. So it worked out really well.
Right, right. Yeah, and I asked, like, you know, that question because obviously if a broker's involved, those are things that would be insisted upon having, would be the lease, would be the security deposit transfer, the, you know, all those things. But, you know, when you're doing it off market and you get some just mom and pop owner that, I don't know, you're sure they live there and this is what they pay.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of the Wild West of real estate investing, and you got to take what you get when you get it. That's really interesting. You know, let's talk about the money side of things. How are you able to fund your opportunities?
In terms of the new things that we have going?
Yeah. Or you know, your acquisitions, or, you know, just walk us through the money side of your business.
Sure. So we've done a couple different creative financing solutions. When we purchased the first two properties, so the order we purchased was a fourplex, a single family home, and then two more fourplexes. We ended up, for the first couple, we've got a good amount of equity in our home. So we were able to tap into that using a local portfolio lender that was very flexible and allowed us to use those funds to use that as the down payment. And then for the set of two fourplexes, which is our third property acquisition, we ended up doing a seller carryback on that. So the situation was that a gentleman had built these properties back in the late 70s. He owned them the entire time. When he got elderly and passed away, he gave them to his kids, and they just wanted absolutely nothing to do with them. You know, they really couldn't sell the property fast enough, to be honest. So we were able to work out with them seller carryback situation, and we actually still have that agreement in place today. So that's worked out quite well for us.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And it is interesting how the next generation doesn't appreciate maybe what the generation before had, or how they assembled it, you know, like, oh, okay, well, this is actually a valuable asset. They just don't know anything about it. So
yeah, it's so true, because it's like that gentleman that built the fourplexes had such a great thing going. You know, he was cash flowing well, and I won't say he took the best care of the property. Maybe when the, you know, the building was newer, he might have, but as he aged, he didn't take quite as good care of it as I think he should have. But I just don't think he passed any of that wisdom onto his kids as to what this can do for you in your financial future. And it's really a shame, right? Because then that asset that could have been something to pass down through the generations of the family was just sold off, and nobody else in that family is going to get to benefit from that.
Right, right. Well, you know, maybe you can start it with your family now. So that's always a good thing regardless. So yeah, that's really interesting. Talk to us, you know, about where you want to go with your business. What's the future look like for you?
Sure. So after doing kind of the small multifamily, single family home thing for a couple of years, I realized that this wasn't scaling at the pace that I wanted it to or needed to. And so I'd say a little over a year ago, I diverted my attention over into multifamily. It's like, okay, there seems to be a lot of people doing this, and it's probably, if there's a lot of people doing it, then, you know, that's probably a viable business model that people are making money with. And I just want to see if this thing is right for me. So I started getting involved in some events, which this is the age of COVID, right? So everything was virtual at the time. I started attending a number of different networking groups. I'm doing some smaller meetups with some different folks that I'd met at those groups, and just really learning and absorbing as much as I could. Again, still with the audiobooks, you know, now my audiobooks were less on house flipping and more on, you know, how to buy apartment buildings. But, you know, that education phase has really, I'd say, moved me well into that next phase. And so now I'm at the point where I found a couple partners. We just got a signed LOI on an apartment in Florida, and we're hoping to get that closed out in the next 60 days or so.
That's awesome. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. And going bigger, that's, I guess, most of our goals is to really scale up into larger assets, just because of the management, the ease of ownership of, you know, bigger assets. What's the unit count on the one in Florida you're looking to buy?
40 units.
Okay. That's very cool. So you'll go from, what'd you say? You have a condo, three fourplexes and a single family. So go from 14 to 40. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Very cool. That is fantastic. You know, I guess when you look at that, what are some things you hope to accomplish by going bigger?
There's a lot of things, actually. I think everyone dreams about the income, and that's always a great thing, but there's so much more involved in terms of, you know, you're taking this asset that is somebody's home, right? It's not a house, but it's still a place where people live. And some of the tenants probably have a good pride of ownership in, you know, in their apartment, and really value the, you know, the space that they live in. And so to be able to continue to protect that, and this property does have some value add opportunities, you know, needs some work and some updating, but it's not terribly run down, right? So the prior owner has done some of that, but there's definitely an opportunity for some additional value add there. And we want this to be a great place for people to live. And we want them to be proud of where they live, continue to stay there. Because as I'm sure you know, tenant turnover is an incredibly expensive thing to manage, right? You're much better off keeping your tenants or your residents than trying to find new ones all the time. So that's a big thing is, you know, making sure our tenants are happy, building a sense of community around where they live. There's passive investors involved because we'll be raising capital. So making sure that their money is very protected in the whole transaction and that we all, when the project does well, we all do well as a result of that. So it's kind of a combination of all those different things.
Right, right. What's it been like approaching passive investors for this project?
This is a space that's very new to me, and I won't lie, it's terrifying. I'm much more of an introverted person. So just to go out and have some of those conversations with people I, you know, don't know or barely know in some cases, it's not an easy thing for me. So that's definitely one of the areas over the next, I would say 6 months to a year, because this is going to extend well beyond this project, right? I want to make sure that is some place where I grow personally and professionally is on the capital raising side of things. So again, you know, it's finding the right educational tools, finding the right meetups and people to talk to immerse yourself in so you can become good at that. Because there's tons of people that are successful with capital raising. So find out what they're doing and do it, right? Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try and forge the path all on your own. Find somebody who's doing it well and follow them and, you know, use them as your mentor and your guide as you start out on your own journey.
Right. No, that's absolutely great. That's absolutely great. And I love the honesty there. It is terrifying, you know, especially when you're starting out going, hey, I'm going to talk to you about raising $1 million and I want you to put a very large sum of money into this deal. Like that's intimidating. And it should be, unless you're fleecing someone, you know, it should be intimidating. Right. You're taking, that's a lot of responsibility when you take on other people's money.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome. Good for you. Before we jump into the final four, is there anything else that you'd like to kind of share about your journey or your experience in real estate thus far?
I think, you know, for people that are newer in the space, as I still consider myself new, right? I'm not a seasoned veteran that's done thousands of units. You know, just keep at it, keep going, keep meeting people, keep networking. You never know when your next connection is really going to be that right person that's the right fit for you as a partner, as a mentor, you know, whatever role that person plays in your life. You just got to keep going and keep on the journey because most people, you know, so many people get into either this type of business or other businesses and they get so excited, right? You've got that shiny object syndrome and it fizzles out after a period of time. And that's where you have to really put in the grunt work to keep going when that excitement fades and you want to just like, maybe this isn't the thing for me. You want to throw in the towel or whatever. That's when you really got to dig deep just to keep going and keep on the journey and know that even though you can't always see the path out ahead, you take it one step at a time and that path is going to present itself for you.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. That is absolutely great. All right. Final four questions are this. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Oh, with no experience, I probably would have bought a house to flip. I mean, it's the glamorous thing to do, right? Everybody's doing it. It's all over TV. And that was certainly what caught my eye initially when I looked into real estate investing. So yeah, with no other type of education, I would have bought a house and tried to flip it.
All right. Very good. Very good. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I would say one mistake that I've made that I would like to share with others that they should avoid is underestimating what goes into property management. So we've self-managed all of the rentals that we've bought thus far. And part of the reason, as I mentioned earlier, we had that, we have a limited maintenance guy that really takes a lot of the heavy weight off of us when it comes to, you know, tenants calling with issues or repairs or things. You know, usually for us, it's just a phone call over to my maintenance guy to get it fixed. But underestimating what goes into all of those different maintenance requests, the lease ups, keeping the tenants, making sure the payments are coming and all those different activities that happen that a property management company normally does. As I scale into multifamily, absolutely going to use a property management company for my bigger properties. And eventually I'll transition my smaller ones over that way too. But it's been such a great learning experience that for me is totally invaluable, right? Because you don't always think about all the details and the day-to-day work that goes into that until you're doing it. And then you're like, oh yeah, this is a ton of work. And it's really worth paying somebody to free up my time so I can work on bigger and better things.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Yeah, underestimating property management time. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Third question is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
So as you mentioned in my bio, I'm a huge advocate of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. I've been involved with that organization for just a little over 10 years now, and I play a number of different roles with a couple of their charitable organizations, and really just, it warms my heart inside and out to be a part of something like that. And so I want to continue that forward in my multifamily journey, not just with St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, because there's so many wonderful organizations out there. There's so much need in the world. And I have a really big heart for charitable organizations, for groups whose sole purpose is to make the world a better place for someone, essentially, right? So part of my investment strategy going forward is just to make sure that, you know, for every dollar we earn, a percentage of that goes to a charitable organization, where so we can make the biggest impact that we can possibly make.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool. That is really cool. Yeah, I appreciate you doing that. Of course, St. Jude is here in my hometown of Memphis, and it's really cool to see what they do. It's awesome. I mean, if you've supported the runs and if you're part of that, I mean, that's enormous production. And it's just really cool to witness and see so many people participate in that. So
that's, yeah, absolutely. That's and so you're in Memphis. I'm near Peoria, Illinois. And so that's where the run goes to, right? It's the Memphis to Peoria run. And there's 40 other small communities around in central Illinois that all run into Peoria at the same time. They arrive in Peoria the same time as the Memphis to Peoria run. So there's literally, and I'm talking pre-COVID days, literally thousands of people that descend into Peoria within a several hour period on this particular day every summer. And then that kicks off the St. Jude Telethon. So again, just to be part of something like that, it's just so, so incredible. So moving. I don't actually run from Memphis to Peoria. I run from Chicago to Peoria. So I'm on one of the satellite runs.
That's really incredible. That is really cool. Good for you. That's fantastic. Last question is this, Rochelle, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. So I've got my brand that you can see here on my background, Titanium Investments. So you can find me at investtitanium.com. And then each of my social handles were on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at the @InvestTitanium handle.
Awesome. Rochelle, thank you so much for your time. Do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.